the reviews are in, and we're going to tell you what they are. Yes, it's Thursday, because we moved the show, because we wanted to. He's Todd Vandenberg, I'm Rob Steele, and we've got some stuff for you to watch, which you should watch, because it's not mandatory, but it's recommended. It's the recommended viewing of stuff, and in some cases, reading. But I'll get to that in a minute. We're going to start with something that Todd touched on last week, but appropriately, unlike politicians of a dubious nature.
Yes.
The Twilight Zone, the new version.
The new version, indeed. We spoke about it last week and talked about that. I was really excited about the relaunch. Jordan Peele, the director of Get Out and Us, both excellent, excellent films. But typically, those are both labeled as horror films, and I don't see either of those as horror films, but very much like feature versions of Twilight Zone episodes because of the weirdness and the lessons and all the rest of it. I mean, they're both fantastic movies. Awesome choice to be the person who relaunches the Twilight Zone. The first two episodes I liked. I liked the second one better, but the Twilight Zone hadn't really hit the mark as like, oh, the other shows, both those episodes totally fit in with the original Twilight Zone. Absolutely. The third episode absolutely fits in with the best of the Twilight Zone episodes. It's terrific. It's called Rewind. Basically, a black mom is taking her black son off to college. They're on a little road trip. And she's carrying her dad's old camcorder with her just for sentimental reasons. And she's goofing off and is videotaping her son while they're at some diner. Accidentally hits the rewind button and it rewinds time. And she flashes back just maybe 20 seconds or so. And her son had accidentally squirted ketchup on his shirt, is not there anymore. He's saying exactly the same thing he was saying before. And she's just has this trippy that she said, oh, this is the worst deja vu ever, et cetera, et cetera. It keeps happening. And it turns out that there's a cop at this diner. As it continues, he pulls him over and things escalate. She hits the rewind button, goes back to the diner, and I'll leave it at that. So this continues to happen. That's all I'm going to tell you about the plot. It's extremely well written, which, of course, is a hallmark of the Twilight Zone to begin with. The acting is terrific. So, yeah, it is taking a look at shootings, just put it that way, of the issue that's going on. And a lot of people are not going to like this episode. The people who are not going to like this episode, if they don't like it because of the message behind it, I don't know if they're bad people, but they refuse to think about anyone except themselves. This is
very political episode.
Very politically charged episode. If you don't like the message, then go ahead and boycott Twilight Zone. I'm sure some people have decided to start that already because of this episode. If you don't care about other people, go ahead, boycott it. This is extremely well done. It's not heavy-handed. It's pretty damn factual. And the person who wrote the episode said that the concept came to them because every time another incident happened, felt like, oh, this is just a replay. It's the same thing over and over. And boom, there was the story. Again, the point of the reason I like it so much is not the message, although the message is really powerful and really important. It's extremely well done. It's very suspenseful. Definitely has the Twilight Zone twist and definitely has another Twilight Zone twist at the very end. Extremely, extremely well done. I would say this fits in the top 20 Twilight Zone episodes ever. And I'm talking about the original show. This is Jordan Peele didn't direct it, didn't write it, but Jordan Peele's new series absolutely made the list now. I mean, this is absolutely the right guy to bring the Twilight Zone forward. And I'm super happy that they really hit their stride in the third episode. So Twilight Zone, again, in our show before, we were talking about there's so many streaming services. The Twilight Zone makes CBS All Access completely worth it all by itself. Highly, highly recommended.
And on top of that, you're getting all the Star Trek stuff that'll be coming out soon or is already out.
Tons of content. So CBS All Access is definitely worth it.
And content the Twilight is Zone, good for
absolutely.
You.
Content is good for you. Especially thoughtful, dramatic, extremely well-acted content. That's just a great episode.
And see, the thing I did this week, I don't know if you can say that the acting is good because it's voice acting. all of the stuff on the screen was drawn the way it was supposed to. How's that? And mine's going to be a bit weird, not just because it's foreign, but because I'm also going to compare it to the roughly 3,000 pages of book I've been reading. Because I finally finished it. And you know what? When you read some books, you get like 300 pages into it, it's finally done, and you go, well, that was more work than I needed it to be. I finished this roughly 3,000-page thing and wanted to start over again.
Wow.
Because Akira was really damn cool. I liked the movie because I saw the movie years ago, which it didn't actually get a theatrical release as such. It got a tour.
Right.
Which was the first time I'd ever heard of a movie getting a tour before. But that's how it was released in the States. It was huge in Japan. It was their top grossing movie for years. And it's an animated sci-fi movie. I'm trying to figure out how I can short form the storyline because it's very complex. There's a secret military project that is trying to develop these, there's some kids who are advanced by means of, you know, telekinesis and telepathy and all this superpowered stuff. There's a rebel group that's trying to expose them. And they, at the beginning of the movie, they've stolen one of the special kids. And that's when they come across a motorcycle gang, not Hell's Angels. These are teenage kids who just happen to have some really cool bikes, including Canada's, not the country. That's the name of the character. If you watch it in English, Canada, it's not Canada. It's Canada. Pronounce it properly. I'm just saying, watch it. See, that's another complication into this. I watched it in Japanese with the subtitles because I don't speak Japanese. I have watched it in English and gone, no, they screwed that up. They screwed that up. That's not what he says here. Read the books. Anyway, one of the motorcycle gang kids named Tetsuo wrecked his bike basically into the kid that was being stolen, which woke Tetsuo's abilities. And from there, Tetsuo goes a bit nuts because he becomes very, very powerful. And the rest of the movie is, we have to stop him, or do we have to prevent Akira from coming back? Who is Akira? Akira is basically the same level that Tetsuo is, if not higher. And he's the one who blew up Tokyo, 30 years before this movie took place. Now, the movie takes place in 2030-ish, which means Tokyo blew up in 1988. Yeah, that didn't happen. That's when the books came out, and that's when the movie came out. There are a lot of differences between the book and the movie, and you've heard me complain about the X-Men a lot, because that's worth complaining about. The differences here, because you can't cram a 3,000-page book into an hour-and-a-half movie, there are some things that are going to get left out. Duh. The difference being, the X-Men movies were written by people who I think looked at a cover once and went, I think it should go like this, and it does not. This movie was written by Katsuhiro Otomo, who wrote the books. Now, if you're watching the movie, if you've read the books and you haven't watched the movie, it goes a little like this. The first 8 issues and the last 2 issues, there's your movie. There's a lot of stuff that happens in between that you're missing that's really good. There's a lot of characters that they develop really good that you will really like in the books that are not even in the movie. They explain the whole thing with the drugs. Do the drugs enhance the abilities? Do they suppress them? Do they give new people special abilities? Depends on which pills they are. They explain that in the books. They kind of look at the drugs funny in the movie, and that's all they do with it. Missed that entirely. There's a whole subplot with Lady Miyoko, which I'm hoping I pronounced that correctly, because she's in the movie. They didn't give her a name, nor is her plot there, where after Japan explodes for the second time, she starts an underground railroad of smuggling people out or getting them medical attention or food. That entire plot is not only there. For some reason in the movie, they gave her a gender change, kind of, because she's still called Lady Miyoko, but she's voiced by a dude and she sounds like a guy. And they kind of made her look like a guy with breasts, which makes very little sense in my head.
or anyone's, I would think.
Well, I mean, Justice League Unlimited, right? I'm tying it together. There was one of Darkseid's minions named Granny Goodness, who was voiced by Ed Asner, which is really weird. Yes, Ed Asner played a woman, but he sounded like a feminine Ed Asner. This one, no. This sounded like Ed Asner, who has smoked for about 30,000 years and just happened to have that voice coming out of a somewhat feminine body. And it did. And if you cut out her subplot, why are you even showing her in the film? I mean, if you cut out that subplot, you don't need her in the film. Yeah, I'm just saying. However, even after all that, and even with all the stuff that is cut out, it's still a really good movie. But some of you are thinking, Rob, it's based on a comic book and it's animated. So it's kind of like a cartoon. I can show it to my kids. No, you can't. There is a lot of limb removal going on. It is very graphic in places. There are parts of it that still freak me the hell out. But Rob, there's a teddy bear in it. Yeah, the teddy bear is freaky as hell. Don't show it to your kids. And the ending of the movie, which I'm not even going to attempt to describe, because it would take the rest of the show, and you don't want to hear about it because it'll give you nightmares. It's that kind of film. But it's still really good. Don't show it to the kids. It's rated R for a reason. It's kind of like Deadpool that way. So I will highly recommend it if you're over 18. And don't watch it under the influence of anything other than life. I'd hate to think what would happen, or what would be going through your head if you were less than sober watching this.
The influence of anything other than life.
Thank you.
Let that be your motto, kids.
Yeah.
Never live your life under the influence of anything other than the influence of that.
It says the guy who didn't do a show about beer at one point.
Many times.
Just saying.
Nothing wrong with that. Anyway.
Meanwhile, your actual film this week.
My actual film this week. And I apologize because I've just discovered there's an alternate director's cut version, which I never knew there was, which is interesting. But maybe another time. I am talking about a film which is 29 years old. I probably should wait till next year to do it, but I'm not. Friend came over who is a acknowledged self-confessed. Anyway, she's a horror film buff, but she had never seen The Exorcist 3 for a good reason, because when The Exorcist 2 came out, it was a godforsaken, horrible train wreck of a movie, and it was terrible. So pretty much no one was interested in watching another sequel to The Exorcist at that point. Even though, how many years went by between the two? Let's see, 17 years between the original Exorcist and The Exorcist 3. And that's about the right time frame that went by. Pretty close to the time frame that went by within the film as well. It picks up the story of Detective Kinderman in the original movie, played by Lee J. Cobb, and this one by George C. Scott, because they wanted him angrier and more irascible, and that would be about the only actor who could pull that off, be more angry than Lee J. Cobb. And Father Dyer, again, they changed the actors. This time they got Ed Flanders, which you may remember from St. Elsewhere. He plays the priest who is the best friend of Damien Karras.
Wasn't that Homer Simpson's neighbor?
That's Nettie.
Oh, sorry.
Close enough.
Also, I just all of a sudden put him in the movie in my head and went, hang on a minute, that doesn't work. Okay. Sorry, I'll shut up.
That would be kind of terrifying. No, please do not shut up. So several years later, about 15 actually, within the context of the film, this is after the original exorcism. Obviously, everyone's a little bit older. Murders are occurring again in Georgetown. And there are particularly horrific murders. They're ritualistic murders. And they seem to fit the MO of a serial killer who was put to death in the electric chair 15 years before. And there are particularly graphic, nasty details which were fed incorrectly to the press. So when people came forward to confess, they would say, okay, next, move on. But these murders fit the actual specific, very specific, gruesome details of the original murders. And a priest has been killed. Actually, a young boy is killed first, then a priest is killed. And Kinderman, again, played by George C. Scott, is leading the investigation. There may be ties to that exorcism that happened long ago that he didn't really know that much about, because he was on the very fringes of that occurrence. And there may be some ties to that original killer, who is the Gemini killer. So he investigates at a nearby hospital as a psychiatric wing. He finds a patient there who looks a lot like Father Karras, who, of course, died at the end of The Exorcist. Sorry for spoiling that movie, which is over 40 years old. But
if you haven't seen it by now.
Yeah, sorry for the spoiler. So, of course, he's rather startled because this guy's supposed to be dead. Things get very spooky. They continue to get spookier. They continue to get weirder. There are some brilliant, brilliant, terrifying scenes. There are lots of red herrings that are thrown up. Things that you think are going to be, oh my God, that's going to be terrible. And it's just someone handing a book over or something like that, because you're set up to expect the big scare. And then it just, you get this release so that the scares can build up again. To me, it's brilliantly constructed. Should be. William Peter Blatty, who wrote the book, The Exorcist, who wrote the screenplay for The Exorcist, wrote the screenplay for The Exorcist 3. And the deal was set to have William Friedkin, the director of The Exorcist, direct this. That part fell apart. He decided, well, I'm not going to waste it. He turned it into a book, Legion, which is an excellent book. And then another studio picked up the rights, and he wrote the screenplay for The Exorcist 3. He directed The Exorcist 3. So pretty much this is the vision that the writer wanted. Although, turns out the studio did impose a different ending, which he wasn't particularly happy with. And as I was just saying, Rob, I just discovered there's a director's cut alternate version, which I will be watching today. So next week I can tack on just a little bit more information about it. George C. Scott is freaking George C. Scott. So, of course, he's incredible. It has some great scenes where he moves from the angry George C. Scott, which is kind of like the wrath of God incarnate, down to just evoking human misery. It's because he's a great freaking actor. One actor I haven't mentioned yet, who is also a tremendous actor, Brad Dourif. One of the best actors around, and typically plays really, really weird characters. He plays the Gemini killer. He's great. And there's one scene where he just completely loses it, and he's raving, and his spit is just like flying out of his mouth because he's so angry and so full of himself, and immediately switches. Oh my, was I raving? It's just freaking awesome. The movie hardly made any money, mainly because The Exorcist 2 was so god-awful. People knew, oh, this is going to be crap, not realizing that, oh, the person who should have been involved was involved. So great, great movie. The ending does get a little wild. Also has Nicole Williamson. I mean, just the voices in this freaking movie alone are just like, oh my God, they're amazing. It's really, really fun following the plot line of exactly how these murders are being committed. Because the guy that you think is committing them, he's locked up and he can't get out. So it's one of those locked room mystery things as well at the same time. But terrific movie. Lots of scares. As I said, very well done, where it builds the suspense and it gives you a breather and then basically guts you with like the next scene. Terrific movie. Absolutely terrific movie. As good as The Exorcist? Probably not. But considering that this is the actual sequel to The Exorcist, if you've seen The Exorcist, or if you saw the TV show adaptation, which was very well done, you have to see The Exorcist and then watch The Exorcist 3 afterwards, like just the next day, because you probably can't, your heart probably can't take it back to back. But tremendous film and sadly overlooked, considering the talent that's involved. And there's a nice surprise. I wouldn't say guest star, because he's in it quite a bit as well. But there's an actor that, like, oh, nice that actor's in there as well. So highly recommended, The Exorcist 3.
Sounds like we got a trio of things that people need to see this week.
Absolutely.
And they can do so without leaving their homes.
How nice of us.
So it doesn't make sense to say you should get out and go see a movie then. I'll need to come up with a better ending while I'm doing that.
Domino's should sponsor us.
Yeah, there you go. Domino's needs to sponsor our show, but do not deliver it on Canada's motorcycle. Because that's not his name. It's Canada. And actually, that was something I meant to put in, because that's one of the iconic things that you get out of Akira was the motorcycle, to the point where I have the McFarlane figure version of it at home, which is where I am now, actually. But it's very cool. if you have not read the books, in the books, that motor, it's 37, 75-page books. or 38 or something like that. That bike doesn't show up after issue 8. In the movie, it's there at the end credits. Oh, spoiler. Silly me. Anyway, you know what you've got in your house? You've got a couch. It's near a TV. So what I'm going to recommend is go sit down and watch a movie.
That's pretty much it.